Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening, and God bless. Welcome to The Woman at the Well, Season 3 Finale, hosted by yours truly, Beverly Black, the creator of The Woman at the Well, live on Tribe Family Channel, a gumbo for the soul international family brand. Testifying today on faith, business, and health and wellness will be entrepreneur Michelle Berard. Now, before I bring on my guest, I would like to take a moment to thank the previous guests that have made this show possible. This particular season three was particularly interesting for me due to my faith recently being on the fence. And Michelle and I will discuss that during the show. But I would like to thank Dr. Yvonne Sion, our season opening guest. She happens to be Dave Chappelle's mother. I would like to thank Esther Austin, a fabulous journalist, Akili Worthy, Altaviz Pelser, also entrepreneurs and authors, Wanda Burnside, Ramel Lee, authors, sister host to our radio station. I'd like to thank Janelle Navera. I'd like to thank Luella Hill Dudley. Although she was not able to be on the show, she was a sponsor, as well as Sage Crystal. I'd like to thank A Goddess Love Jameson, Beverly Holloway, Anitra Hall, H. Victoria Ackerson, and Dr. Maxine Bryant, all for sharing their testimonies with me. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for this particular show, Michelle Berard will be testifying. I don't generally read bios on The Woman at the Well. From the biblical context, in the Bible, John 4:39, you didn't hear any bios being read at the well, but rather a woman that went to the well, a Samaritan woman, to draw water. And there she met a man. So many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him, the man that she met, because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. That is also on the front cover of my book, the sponsor of this show, A Wretch Like Me, From Crack Addict to Change Agent. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, my guest, Michelle Berard. Hello, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, Beverly. I am good. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. It is my pleasure. Thank you so much for not only attending, but taking the time out to be here, taking time away from your busy schedule. But thank you also for being a host of Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard on our sister show. And just thank you in general for being a real true friend and a queen, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. So,
I always love chatting with you.
You know, I love talking with you as well, and I find so many similarities. It is just beyond. So I really look forward to this conversation because it falls along the pattern of allowing the testimonial part of you to come through, and it doesn't necessarily take me to evoke that. I'm just here to help the message along, but for our listeners, this is definitely a testimonial show. It's something that I encourage our guests to be as transparent as you'd like to be. And so with that, let's talk about faith. Now, what does faith mean to you? What does faith mean to you?
Faith is such a huge topic that I think it's really hard to narrow down. But in a very personal way, faith to me means just knowing that everything's going to be all right because it's got to be all right. So you don't get discouraged. Or if you get discouraged, you get over that as quickly as you can so you can keep stepping.
Wow. So your faith is so strong that you don't leave any options. It's almost like, you know what, we've got to make it because we've got to make it. You're not taking no for an answer. Faith is faith. We're going up this hill because we have to. We're going down this hill because we have to. We're going around this hill because we have to. So I admire people that have that strong sense of faith that, you know, we're going to do it because we have to. There's no other way.
Well, I mean, I think anybody, well, I think women in particular, let me be frank with you. I think women in particular specialize in that type of faith because it is so common for a woman to have to keep pushing through obstacles. And even if she's, you know, connected with somebody, she's married or she's, you know, in a relationship or something, there's so many things that you have to push through on your own as a woman. And especially if you're a mother, there's so many things that you push through day to day, you know, from the little hassles to the big challenges that, I mean, I don't know any woman who doesn't operate in that way, you know?
Wow.
Women get up and they just get up and do. You know,
Amen.
Often to the extent of not taking care of themselves as well as they should sometimes. But that's what we do. We get up and we do what needs to be done. That's just how we tend to operate in my experience.
Well, and with that type of mindset, and I echo that, with that type of mindset, you know, the sense of faith is that you don't even think about it. It's something that's it's calculated. It you just go through it and you do it. And it takes a very focused, calculated mind to actually execute and be task oriented regardless as to what, you know, challenges you're faced with. And we are going to talk about challenges in topic number three, but I'm going to move on to number two. And let me preface number two. The question is, when did you choose your faith and why? But let me preface it. So my belief and my experience is that we are born into our faith. We're born into it. Whatever faith is being practiced or the lack of is the environment that we are born into. Most people would acquiesce they're born into and raised under until they get a sense of direction and knowledge for themselves to choose or not to choose faith or the lack of. So in prefacing that, I'll give you an example. My grandmother was Catholic. I'm not Catholic, but she introduced me to God. My first church sermon was in her house on my knees, a young girl spending summers and time with my grandmother, praying and, you know, watching her read her Bible before I could read. And so I'm born into a praying family in that sense. The matriarch of the family is, you know, who brought me to God. So that's why I say we're born into it. Now, did I choose to become Catholic? No, I didn't. Was my mother into faith in church? I can't measure the level of her faith. I know that it waned in some areas in different conversations. But she didn't take me to church, and we took, you know, the neighborhood bus to church with the other kids and this and that. I raised my children in the church. But then my faith took a turn during this season of The Woman at the Well. So when did you choose your faith and why? based upon being born into whatever circumstances or lack of.
Okay, so I might have a complicated history as far as faith is
concerned.
That's
okay. We have so much time. I might have some complicated questions. So shoot, I'm
okay.
Ready.
All right. So, well, I was baptized Catholic, grew up in the Catholic Church, went to Catholic school. And I'm going to tell you, I love Catholicism. And what I love about it is the ritual. I love high ritual. That sort of thing is beautiful to see. It's beautiful to participate in. And I think it is part of human beings' desire to make order of the world, that we create rituals, because we create daily rituals, like always putting our keys in a certain place or always putting our glasses in a certain place, always doing the same routine before we walk out of the door and lock the door kind of thing. So we are ritual-based entities, I think, because I think our brains process things well that way and helps to organize life. So I love the ritual of the Catholic Church. I am not as crazy about some of the sexist dogma of the Catholic Church. And I started questioning that when I was as young as 10 years old. And I think I may have told you this once when we were talking. The minute a nun said to me, oh, if you're wearing short shorts or something and you walk past a guy and he gets excited, it's your sin. I was like, well, I don't know what I have to do with that. I'm not sure. How do I control that? I have.
Okay.
So at 10 years old.
At 10 years old. But see, that is intelligent discernment. And, you know, that's that mouth. You know, we have that mouth, Michelle. And so, you know, in other words, you know, what do I have to do with that? You know, what do I have to do with that? I don't control him.
Right, exactly. It'd be different if it was me, you know, but I don't have any control over what he does or feels. So I guess from that perspective, at that point, I started kind of wondering about the logic of some of these things. And I happen to have great teachers, and I think I got a great education in the Catholic school system. I stayed in Catholic school until ninth grade, and I had teachers that encouraged me to question. So it wasn't a big thing that I was asking these questions. I mean, yeah, you know, obviously I'm considered a smart mouth and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think I was encouraged to question, and I think that was a good thing. And so that kind of, you know, I stopped, you know, you stop going to church when you're in college or, you know, whatever. We used to go to church in high school because we wanted to talk about the parties the night before. It wasn't even like in high school, you know, we were particularly devout, as I recall, of my friends and I. But, you know, but in college, you know, I had girlfriends try to take me to say again, ma'am.
I said, well, for social reasons, because when you think about it, when you're, you know, you're talking about back in the day when people went to church for everything. So not only for praying, but for the socializing as well. So when you speak of, you know, wanting to know what the party was about, you know, the church was a place for coming together, fellowshipping, and socializing.
Well, it was more like gossiping. I'm not going to sit here and lie. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to front. We would sit there and gossip in front of the church. But, you know, you go to college, you kind of drop out of that a little bit a lot of the times. And, you know, I was I moved to Georgia for college. And didn't really go to church unless a girlfriend asked me to go with her to AME church or something. But I don't think I really started thinking about organized religion again until I had my own children. And, of course, I wanted my children baptized Catholic because you can never be too certain. You know, God might be Catholic. That might matter. So I went ahead and did that.
All right. That's interesting as well because my two oldest were baptized Catholic, being raised during my crack addiction, being raised, you know, by my family. So, yeah, but my two youngest were baptized in a Baptist church. So,
oh wow,
as
okay.
Was I. Yeah, as were I. But, well, let me ask you this. What single moment in your life most greatly challenged your faith? What single moment in your life most greatly challenged your faith? And you can take your time on that one.
No, I don't have to take my time. I have two. Mm-hmm. When my mom passed, I was 19 years old when my mom passed.
Oh, I'm sorry, sweetie.
Yeah. And I think at that time, I just was convinced that God hated me. I was convinced that God hated me. And I think the reason I was convinced was because my mom had been sick for quite a while. And I kept saying to myself, you know, and kind of, you know, talking to God in the way that I did back then. I didn't really, you know, like I said, go to church or anything like that. But I kept saying, God, all I want is to graduate and get a good job so that I can take care of my mom and my sister. That's all I wanted. And my mom passed over the holiday break my senior year. So I had like four and a half months, and I was going to graduate, and I was heartbroken and distraught. But I had to keep pushing because I had to graduate because I had no more money to hang around school. It was terrible. And I was convinced that God hated me. I was absolutely convinced. And some years later, when my first marriage fell apart, we were actually living over in Mexico. We were living in Mexico City. And I swear, I just pined for my mom in a way I had never. It's almost like all that stress from the years before that I pushed down so that I could keep doing, so I could graduate with decent grades and start working and, you know, all that, just bubbled up to the surface in the most vicious way. And, I mean, I remember just laying on the floor of this, I mean, we were in this beautiful home in Mexico City, and I was just laying on the floor crying. I just couldn't even, I was so heartbroken in that moment, and all I wanted was my mom. And I think those two kind of went together in a profound way for me. And that would be the two.
And it's almost like, and thank you for being transparent. I lost my brother when I was 17, and it was January 21st when he shot himself, and he died January 22nd. Yeah. So I was a senior in high school, and I wrote a letter to my counselor, and I told her basically I needed to be graded now so that I could graduate in June, because there was nothing else that I would be able to do between here and then. So yeah. I just showed up. That's all I could do. So I can really understand that type of loss being so young, not in the maternal sense, but my brother was my best friend. And, you know, being young, you know, you don't deal with death. You know, we didn't deal with death. I'm 58. I'll be 59 in June. And growing up, the playing field wasn't like it is now today with the youth and the millennials, how they face death every day. You know, when I was growing up, you know, people just didn't die. I didn't know what death was. So, you know, my uncle died when I was 6 and my brother at 17. So there weren't any deaths in between that, you see? So my heart goes out to you for, you know, the loss of your mom. She's proudly shining and smiling upon you. And just to think about the experience in Mexico, it's almost like bridging that which you bottled up and then coming to a point of release. It's almost like it was destined for you to have that period where you have to get this out. It's almost like, you know, an uncomfortable constipation, and I don't mean to make it sound that horrific or to bring in anything mm-hmm. gross about it, but if you think about being bottled up inside and you have been stuffing and stuffing and stuffing and you aren't comfortable holding it all in and it's forced out. It was absolutely forced out. And for you purge that in Mexico upon your return to the United States, what was that experience? Did you feel like something was left back in Mexico?
Well, there was so much drama and trauma associated with mm-hmm. that separation and divorce that mm-hmm. honestly, if I told you about it, it could be its own little mini series, frankly. It could be. It was drama, and I think it took a long time for me to get settled into myself again. What mm-hmm. what really happened, even before that, though, I had started looking into African spirituality, and I had looked mm-hmm. into alternate spiritual traditions off and on since high school, because mm-hmm. it didn't make sense to me, like I said, some of the things that they said in the Catholic Church, And I tend to be curious by nature. So mm-hmm. I looked into different alternate religions and spiritual practices, and I actually started dealing with the ancestors. I started looking into the Orisha traditions, the Haitian voodoo tradition, the New Orleans voodoo tradition, even more so in college because I was curious about those historical ties between mm-hmm. Louisiana and Haiti, as well as the cultural ties. Mm-hmm. I looked into goddess worship in various countries mm-hmm. and various traditions. So I've been exploring for a while, but what ended up shaking out, if you will, ultimately, was kind mm-hmm. of what I would call a hodgepodge that I have pulled together of African tradition, Catholicism, and what might be considered kind of Buddhist, you know, kind of meditation and things like that. And the reason is what I found over the years, and this has been, again, like I would safely say at least from 2000 till now, so about 17 years. What I found is that no one tradition answers all the questions. And so I had a friend who was a historian, and he actually said that there are stories that symbolize the spread of the way that religion has information, but it's not complete. And the story of Osiris being torn into all these different pieces, these 13 pieces, and spread around the world is actually one of those stories that is symbolic of the spiritual knowledge being spread throughout the world and no one having all of the pieces. No one having all of the knowledge. And so in order to get as much of that knowledge as you can and as much understanding as you can, you have to talk to other people. You have to explore other cultures. You have to explore other religions. Otherwise, you're going to be just caught up in your little thing and think you've got all the information. And I don't think that's possible for us as human beings to have.
You know, and what is so profound about what you're saying is the question that I were to ask you next is how important is spiritual wellness? But you've answered that. Spiritual wellness is so important that you do have to do some historical research. You have to basically do it for yourself. So just like you say, you have a mixture, a hodgepodge of sorts, and it has to do with your background, your upbringing, the diaspora of, you know, your people. You're from New Orleans. You're going into different directions and a diaspora, if you will. And so I really like that because that is pretty much
kind of like what I wound up doing in as far as what I'm going to say as far as my next question, because I had to do some research, and we had a conversation the other day, and as you know, I recently found myself on the fence of my faith, which prompted a deeper study into God's word. I have, like I said, been exposed to God's word as a young child through my grandmother, and then the neighborhood church, you know, roundup of the kids going to church, and that was pretty much it. Nothing, you know, consistent outside of prayer and grandmother. My grandmother was the most consistent thing about God in my life besides God himself. And so later on, raising my children in the church and reading the Bible and just taking it for everything that I'm reading and highlighting and just going through it and, you know, systematically, almost the order thereof. This is the order of, you know, life. This is God's word, Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, instructions for living, you know, and I'm living this to the best of my ability. Faced with how to, you know, teach my children to pray, I went back to my grandmother's teachings. Oh, okay, well, let me just teach them how to, you know, say the Lord's Prayer and what have you. But now, fast forward to as an adult myself, kids are grown, and I'm getting this shift in my spirit. I'm reading this word, and it's just not adding up like it used to. It just used to add up, or maybe I just wasn't taking the time to, you know, read and really digest everything. I was too busy just making it fit in, and it had to be my program. You know, I'm a Proverbs 31 woman, and I'm the saved woman. I'm a righteous woman, you know, but I'll call a thing a thing. I'm the last person you want to give the microphone to at church, I bet you that. Okay. I'm going straight to the front row. Okay. Because, you know. But so I'm reading, and now I'm starting to become convicted in my spirit because everything that I'm reading is just not adding up. Okay. So I started doing my research and going back into history and geography and the Kemet Bible and Islam and just, you know, ancient Egypt and just everything that I could really try to get my hands on in the shortest period of time, because this is, like I said, this season that we're in right now. I just started season 3 of The Woman at the Well about 8 months ago. So in that season, I was explaining to my first guest, and she explained to me, just like I were telling you, that she attended, she changed faith, but she still attended, you know, a Christian denomination church. So it boils down to, when you start to become convicted and things aren't adding up and it does prompt for a deeper study, what books and what areas of study would you recommend for people that also become convicted in this way, where, you know, things aren't adding up in the King James version of the Bible? So this is supposed to be God's word, but this is King James's version. So, you know, I had to go back to, okay, I want versions before King James, because he got there late. You know, so what areas of study would you recommend?
Well, see, this is where my secular side comes out, because I think you start with actual history. I recommend that you study world history, and not just the world history that starts with Greeks and Romans, because one of the challenges is that the history that we're typically taught in the United States doesn't go far back enough. So you really need to look at the history of the world beyond, you know, where they typically start world history for in the United States, you know, at least in, you know, by high school or what have you. So if you don't take advanced classes in those things, if you don't study those books and go beyond that, you're going to have a lot of information missing. And my personal opinion has been that most people who point at the Bible as God's word in a very literal sense don't understand the history of the Bible. The Bible is a book like any other. And that particular book was actually based on ancient stories that had been around for a very long time. They were ancient at the time that the book was put together. And if you don't study about the Council of Nicaea, you don't study about Constantine and how he was trying to consolidate political power and the purpose of that council in putting that book together, you don't understand that the book is not what you think it is. So I'm not saying it's not a powerful book. I have multiple Bibles in my house. I have Bibles in English and in Spanish. I have my Bible that I had in eighth grade for confirmation. I've been carrying that Bible around since then. So there's great power in the book. I don't dispute the power in the book, but I think you need to understand the history of the book and the basis of the book. So that's where I think most people need to focus, because if you don't understand the political reasons that that book was put together, you don't understand that there were a lot of stories left out, as well as the decisions about what was going to be put in and why those decisions were made. You don't even understand how you got the book today, because after that, people had to copy the book by hand. And then you had some people who might change things because they didn't like the way it sounds. And then you might have people who change things because the handwriting of the person they're copying it from was bad. You know, so there are all these different things that go into that. Then you had where different sects developed. So you had the Lutherans and all these other different people, and they all started producing their all different kinds of Bible. So until you go through that history and really fully understand it, I don't think that you can really say that you understand the Bible. I don't have to know every word in the Bible. I don't have to be able to quote verses, because I know the political reasons behind the Bible. So I can use it as the tool that it is, which is a powerful tool for prayer. There are also curses in the Bible. Most people don't pay attention to that, but there are curses in the Bible as well as blessings. There's advice in the Bible. There's historical stories about battles, famous battles, that may actually have some basis in truth. We just don't necessarily know if all of that is the case. So, I mean, there's a lot of wonderful stuff in there. And if nothing else, it's a fabulous testament to the way that people want to organize their lives around something bigger than themselves. People seem to need that or desire that. And that book has shaped many important lives, you know, and lives of people who have been important in our world and have promoted positive change. It's also shaped a lot of really negative change, such as the Catholic Church and other religious people here in the United States and around the world endorsing the slave trade in Africa, you know, things of that nature. So when you look at all those things, I think once you have a firm understanding of all that, then you can say, okay, now I can form a basis of what I want to take from this, the good and the bad, and how I want to use that.
Now, you ought to be a carpenter's daughter, because you done hit a lot of nails on the head. But let me just point out some of them. So, now, you know, we are so much alike, and I know where your brain went, I perceive I do, when it comes to looking at the Bible as a book, because we're both publishers, Michelle. And so the first thing you reminded me about, you know, when I started, because I have many Bibles, I have a Bible that's so torn up. I've read it from cover to cover. It's highlighted this and that and the other, and, you know, underlined and this and that. So you can definitely extrapolate teachings and applications for living. Yes, you can. Also, you can look at it as it is stories that have been transcribed, as you say, many hands, many times over. So much would have been lost in the translation. Much was decided to be left out. Once you start doing your history and you're looking at it like, okay, let me go back to the front of this book. Published when? Okay, because in my research, you know, man was on the earth before this Bible was transcribed.
Yep.
And the period of time herein, you know, history and geography shows that. So you start to wonder, okay, what was this? What was this works compiled from? Okay, that's the books and the works, and you know what I want to read. And so I started, you know, kind of looking back and looking back. But the other point that you you make is that, you know, it is a good book. It does have applications for your life. It also has battles in it. Now, here's one thing and something that I take very serious. There is, and I don't know which verse it is, but people quote it all the time, or they'll just say it if it's a mantra or verse of scripture. The kingdom of God was taken by force. Now, I believe that with my whole heart, because just like you said, there's battles in the Bible. Every time you turn around, they went into the city and they took it. They went into this and they took it. There was a battle here and a battle there. And then people are always talking about the kingdom of God was taken by force. And what's the last thing people will do? The last thing people will do, especially quote unquote church people, is confront the truth. That's why I say you don't want to hand me the microphone in the church. Okay, because I started the pulpit and walk all around the place, okay? and you know, I've been through too much. See, I've been on the trial. I've been on trial and on the witness stand so much, okay, till my life is an open book. So, you know, now I want to read everybody else. Let's read your story, right? I'm the last one. So don't sit there and posture and, you know, sit up in that front row like you don't have any problems, Miss First Lady or Miss Mother of the Church or Miss Front Row or, you know, all the way to the back. You know, I've sat in the front, I've sat in the back, and the things I've heard is like, clutch the pearls. We're in church? Okay. Wow. You know, and so for me, people will not take what they need to take and walk that walk. In other words, the kingdom of God is taken by force, but when they're confronted in life, they take the high road. You know, and sometimes you got to stand, and sometimes you have to fight. And I don't mean physically, but I mean you have to confront. You know, if you have a principled person will stand. And you cannot waver. If you're principled and you're strong in your foundation, you know who you are, you know whose you are, and you don't get there overnight. You have to be attuned to this. God takes you through. You know, I've cried on the floors. I've cried in where I've perceived that I'm in God's lap. You know, I've been there, Michelle. I've been in the dark where I've, you know, had to cry out to God and have that purging, that on the floor crying and freedom and that release. So all of that to say that you really have to, you know, have intelligent discernment when it comes to that book, because it is that, a book. Okay, and all of the points and the, you know, nails that you hit on the head about, you know, there being battles and blessings and, you know, and curses as well. You know, it tells the slave masters to beat their slaves. And I'm looking at this like, okay, how can, you know, this, that, and the other. So it's really a trip. It's really a trip. But that is our round of faith. I want to give you the final word of that chapter before we move on to business.
Well, I mean, there's so many things that you can see in the Bible. Like I said, there, I mean, if you sit down and read it, I went through a phase in high school where I was fascinated with apocalypse. I just thought it was the most fascinating section of the Bible. It was colorfully written, and these stories were just like mind-blown kind of things, right? When you read them, it's like, was the person dropping acid when they wrote this? You know what I mean? You're kind of wondering what was going on there. I think there's always something that you can find in there. There's some people who use it for prophecy. So, like, there are people who are spiritual advisors who will use it when they're working for their clients. There's so many ways that the Bible is used in faith that I think there's room for everybody, you know, to take that in. But I do think people need to really study up on why and how that works.
And historically, it goes without saying that you do have to look at other cultures and other beliefs and other lands and surmise that God is the creator of us all. We all were born with our own individual gifts, our own genius. Different people in different lands were given different languages, different skin tones. We are not of ourselves. We did not create ourselves, but the human being can be the most ignorant of all of God's creation when it comes to that mere fact right there. And so it can be very sad. It can be very disheartening when it's just a matter of simplicity and just seeing that we are all a beautiful creation of God. So I want to thank you so very much. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say the other way to think about that, and this is what I think, this is the way I communicated it to my kids. I don't know if they remember me telling them this. But I kind of figured at some point that God kind of said, you know what, I want to experience everything. And in order to experience everything, I have to create myself over and over and over again.
Wow.
And so we are essentially little slivers of God, and we're all put on different paths so that God can experience all these different things in different ways. And that's why I see us as spiritual beings kind of in human form.
That's beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. The body of God. We are living souls in, you know, in human flesh. We're living souls in the flesh. Well, I want to thank you for a very in-depth and transparent faith talk. We are going to move on to the second section of The Woman at the Well here live on Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand. I am Beverly Black, the creator of each entity, and my guest today is Michelle Berard. She is an entrepreneur, a woman of God, a woman of faith, a New Orleans native, a graduate of Agnes Scott College. She's lived in Mexico and Central America for several years. Software trainer, graphic designer, editor, and writer. And she founded Urban Book Editor LLC to serve urban authors, book clubs, agents. It's not limited to authors. But she'll get you published. So, talking about business. Now, you wear a lot of hats. You are a radio show host. You have your own show on Tribe Family Channel, Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard, alternating Fridays, coming up this Friday. And just a myriad of things, real estate, different business ventures that you not only support, you're also a sponsor for Youth Rising Radio, also on Tribe Family Channel, with so many things, wearing so many hats. How do you stay above the fray?
Oh, the fray gets me. The fray gets me sometimes. But no, actually,
you it hasn't
not yet.
You.
Not yet.
And it won't. And
actually,
it won't.
Well, people ask me that all the time. Like, well, how do you do so much? I really focus on time management in a way that is almost obsessive. My kids will tell you, if you ever meet them face-to-face, Beverly, they will tell you that I insist that they put everything in my calendar, because if it's not in my calendar, it doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. I have been this way.
I remember you telling me that.
Yep. If it's not in my calendar, it doesn't exist. And, that, you know, there was a time when you started your career. I started my career in D.C., 1991, I graduated from college and ended up in the D.C. area working for a company that doesn't exist anymore called American Management Systems. Or if it does, it doesn't do what it used to do. And when I came into that company, the first thing they did was handed me a catalog and said, order a day timer. Now, people who are not our age don't remember that they don't, these younger kids probably don't know what a day timer is, but a day timer was how you lived your life if you were in business back in the early 90s. And, you know, you had your calendar, you had, you know, you could customize this thing and put whatever you wanted in there. I would have the calendar, area for notes. Back then we were carrying floppy disks, yes. So I had, you know, to put my floppy disks in there. I could, a little zippered part for that. I mean, all these different things. I had a beautiful day timer. Yes. So, and then, of course, evolved from that to the technology of Palm Pilots and things like that. Now, of course, everything's on your smartphone. But I think that foundation that was given to me at AMS about managing my time and writing down appointments and writing down things to do really shaped the way that I operate now. It's not to say that I don't forget things. It's not to say that I don't, you know, I don't ever drop the ball. But I think that I operate at a slightly higher level than folks who didn't have that kind of training early in their careers. And that's what keeps things going around here.
You know, and I echo that sentiment, Michelle, being from a family of entrepreneurs and, you know, growing up playing school, you know, I had to have the clipboard and, you know, so having a desk growing up as a student, having that sense of organization, and I'm like you, oh my goodness gracious, I could not wait to get the catalog. When you got the company catalog of office supplies and it was time to order your Franklin Covey planner, oh, honey, with the leather, black leather-bound planner with the calculator, they don't know nothing about that, okay?
No. Nope.
With the appointments,
nope.
Writing down, oh, I loved it. And in fact, Michelle, I still have my daytime planners here. They're so, they're leather bound, black leather bound, but they're old and I don't use them, but they essentially did help set the tone for being focused. You operated with a sense of focus, and it was a sense of prestige, if you will, because everyone got to order office supplies from, you know, your company. And so you did feel this sense of accomplishment, this sense of having order and having a sense of pride, if you will, a sense of achievement, a sense of, you know, being able to project professionalism. And so you're right. These days, you don't get that. Everything is, you know, in your hand and people are looking down. You're lucky if someone looks up and says hello. You know, And typically, I've always made it a practice not to be on my phone in the store. But now, since I make going to the store part of my daily routine, I will be on the phone in the store, but I'll put that person on hold if I don't get off of the call at the checkout, so that I can engage with the checker, say hello, how's her day, finish the transaction, don't hold up the line, make a joke saying she didn't see my phone, and then, you know, because we are more antisocial than social in a social media world. But I love the fact that you said if it's not on your calendar, it doesn't exist. And I remember when you first told me that, I cracked up. Like, you know what? I had to go out and get another calendar. My calendars are so, I still handwrite everything. And I use erasable ink. I still handwrite everything because I'm a radio producer. So I have 22 radio show hosts, and I have to erase and rewrite and this, that, and the other. But I stay above the fray like you, pretty much, with that sense of order and extreme focus. I mean extreme focus. So I love what you do and how you do it. Tell us about your first business. What was opening up your first business like? And what was that?
Okay. My first business, I started when I think it was right after I had my first baby. So that would have been about not quite 25 years ago. And that business was called Design Works. And I was doing computer graphics, freelance computer graphics. I was in the D.C. area. And this is just to show you how you really have to follow your own spirit, because I was married to someone who did not see my vision. He just didn't. He didn't understand what I was trying to do. He didn't understand why. He was very focused on, you've got a job. Why do you need to do this too? You know, that kind of thing. And I was just always determined, I don't want to have to work for other people for the rest of my life. I just don't want that. And at the time, I was doing computer graphics at AMS, American Management Systems, which I mentioned before. And actually, I think I was at AMS by then. And I started doing freelance computer graphics, and that was my first business. I never made a lot of money doing it, partly because I had a full-time job, and I was a wife, and I was a young mother. And back then, we still socialized at that point, too. So with just one kid, you know, they're pretty portable. You throw them in a bag and keep it moving, you know. So we used to do stuff. But it was really good training for me, I think. And also, I think it reinforced that concept that I always had of wanting to be more independent, not wanting to have a job. And I don't know if it's because I have a rebellious nature. I've been told that. I've been called problematic before, so that could be it. But I've just always wanted to work on my own and do me, you know? Maybe I just don't like being told what to do. Who knows?
Maybe she just has a mind of her own. How about that?
There you go. So, but you know, you have to follow your own spirit, because sometimes the people around you will discourage you in a variety of ways. So if you're married and, you know, you make financial decisions together, and of course then your husband doesn't want to let you purchase the equipment you need to do your business, you know, that's a huge hindrance, and you might have to go out and find another way to get what you need. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of stuff that I battled against, and I encourage women to start businesses, even if it's just to have a little extra money coming in on the side, because you never know what your situation can end up being. Right now, everything is hunky-dory, and next thing you know, you find out something else is going on that you didn't know about. You may need to have that. So I just think you have to follow your own heart with that, and that's what I ended up doing. That's how I started that business.
And you know what? I appreciate your transparency. You do have to follow your heart, and you have to be brave enough to do that. I wrote a quote the other day. I'm a quoteologist, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't even have it in front of me, but I posted it, and I said, you have to be, you know, brave enough to walk in your truth, to stand in your truth, to live in your truth. You just have to be brave enough to do so. And I salute you and all women that take the initiative to, regardless of what, married, children, whatever your life composition is, to walk in your gifting. We all have our own God-given gift, and you're either working for someone else and producing their idea, or you're working for yourself, producing your idea, or you may want to take the alternative, like it sounds like you and I did, Michelle, of working for someone else until you can work for yourself. And
yeah.
So I took that route, but I was formerly married, and I was in a situation where I had created Gumble for the Soul Publications. And for our listeners, you're tuned into The Woman at the Well. This is a discussion with Beverly Black, myself, and my guest, Michelle Berard. And we are speaking on faith, business, and we will soon get to health and wellness. But now, speaking on business and being in a situation where maybe you're married and someone doesn't believe in your vision, or you can be in whatever. You can be a student. You can be at the job and be on a team and someone doesn't believe in your idea that you threw out there. You still have to believe enough in yourself, okay, because no one's going to hold you up as mm-hmm. best as you can hold yourself up when it comes to your ideas. Now, I had created Gumble for the Soul. I was married at the time. I was an at-home mom. I had actually walked away from a job. I was making probably, I wanted to say the annual, but I didn't calculate it. I remember starting that job at $21 an hour. I'm from Silicon Valley, grew up a stone's throw from Stanford University. So my background is electromechanical microscopic fiber optics technician. And I always tell my kids, okay, you know, I built this technology that you're using today. You know, I shut them down. I don't want to hear it, okay? I just can't. I don't want to hear it, okay? You hear them talking about the B-1 bombers? I built converters that are in the B-1 bombers. And
right.
So from electronics, I made good money, and I made more money than my husband at that time. But when mm-hmm. I created Gumble for the Soul Publications, I walked away from a job. Was 9/11 had hit, rest in peace those souls, mm-hmm. and I just wasn't going to do that commute. So we're you know, living in the country, I'm no longer working. So I'm at home with the kids. I take them to school every day. He's working, and he's fussing every day. You know, there's something about a man that has to work every day and the wife is at home that he just does not understand. And he mm-hmm. will vent that world. Now, there's a difference between venting and discussing how your day was, okay? And so I would get the venting. And mm-hmm. I was like you. I created something that I believed in, and he didn't. But the kids mm-hmm. knew about it. And so it culminated to the point where I had the same publicist as Tavis Smiley. That's how I got him to endorse my first book. My first book is endorsed by Tavis Smiley, right? But now, former husband don't believe in what I'm doing, okay?
Wow.
So it's time for dinner, and he's calling us to dinner, and the kids have seen this culminating because they're at home, and they watch Mama, and they know, and Mama talks to them and run ideas by them, and, you know, but that shuts down when husband get home, right? Don't it? Because the whole energy changes. Okay, now
yep.
is what he, you know, getting dinner together and trying to figure out what his energy going to be like and, you know, still dealing with the kids. Go say hi to your daddy, you know, keep his, calm his nerves. But When you don't believe in someone, you don't know what you're sleeping on. You know, you're passing on a diamond. You don't know that.
Yes.
And he didn't believe in that. And so I can relate with what you're saying about, you know, starting your own business and not having someone that's right there with you, sleep with you, but don't believe in what you're doing. That's nuts to me. Okay, that's absolutely nuts to me. You know, so, and then want you to shut down your vision to carry theirs. That's almost like playing football. Okay, so I'm going to carry the ball. I'm going to quarterback this thing, right? Okay, but you're going to leave me out here on the field to quarterback it myself? Because you have to run, this field with me.
Right, exactly. So, that's how I used to, you know, and I did remarry, and that didn't work out either, but that's okay. But what I used to tell my second husband all the time, I used to tell him, it has to be us against the world. Because I didn't have that in my first marriage. And I tried to make that so clear. This has to be us against the world. It can't be where we are at odds or we're letting other people interfere, whether through talking. And that's a lot of what people do is they'll talk in your husband's ear and tell him some crazy, and then he comes home and tells you some crazy. I've seen that. They get out with their friends and they start, you know, and it happens to women too, where women go out with their girlfriends, they come back and they're talking crazy to the husband. But that's, I think that's really what you're talking about. It's got to be you and that partner against the world, because I tell anybody, I can do bad by myself. I don't have to stay in a stressful situation with somebody who's not going to have my back the way I have his. So that ultimately, you know, I mean, obviously that didn't work out for me, but what it did do, I think from a business perspective, it really taught me that you don't just stop. But your first business probably won't be successful. It may if you're really, you know, diligent and you've done all your research and you've got the right market and right tool and right products, you're probably good. But your first business probably won't be successful. Your second business may not be successful. Your third business may not be successful. I've had successful businesses and unsuccessful businesses. But the thing is to not give up on that, no matter what anybody's telling you. If your spirit is telling you, look, you need to create, then you got to create. Whatever it is that you've got to create, go create it. And that may turn out to be a successful thing for you. But even if it's not, the experience, the journey, the process is so valuable.
Amen. Amen to that. And the same here, you know, it's trial and error. It's our giftings, you know, you're allowing the giftings to come up to the surface and have a tangible presence in your life. Now, I think the source of people that don't necessarily accept another person's gifting is because they're not focused on theirs. A lot of people will be jealous because you are finding a way to walk in your gifting, even buffering against the vicissitudes of life. Yes, I said it, the vicissitudes of life. I love that word. But you find a way to walk in your giftings even while buffering against all that life is throwing at you. And a lot of times our counterparts do not find the space and time to do that. They're operating under a different set of stresses, and we do realize that. And in relationships, we have to, you know, we have to understand that our men go out there in that world and they're operating under a different set of stresses, and then they don't understand the set of stresses we operate under until we leave them at home with the kids. Oh, now you get it, huh? Okay, now you have to have this talk again. No good. You know, they don't get it until that point, okay? And those are far and few in between, you know. So I totally agree with you. Now let me give you a point that my father, and I'm a daddy's girl, rest in peace, daddy. What he told me, the product 409, and this is still business. The product 409, the household spray, Do you know how they got their name?
No.
Because they tried and failed 408 times.
Are you serious?
I am not playing. So about starting a business and failing and this and that and the other, unless you have tried 410 times, probably don't want to tell me, because I'll be like, well, keep on trying. Well, keep on. I have reason to encourage you. Well, keep on doing. Well, you got this, because, see, your gifts are pressed down, shaken together, and running over, okay? So tapping into that well. Keep tapping into that well. And so stay above the fray by having that focus, that just, you know, that sense of, I don't know, order and what have you, and that sense of not giving up, going back to faith, okay? It has to get done, you know? So now, what is your source of direction and strength, though? You know, we're in a convoluted world. Look at the playing field. What is your source of direction and strength? You know, we have God and we have faith. I know you mentioned meditation and different things like that. What are some of the tangible things and ideas that our listeners can grab a hold to that you use as your sense of strength and direction?
Okay, so the first thing I absolutely must say is, if it were not for my children, I might have given up a long time ago. I'm not going to lie. Everything I do for them, ultimately. And, I mean, my kids are almost grown, but I still perceive it as a goal, if nothing else, for them to see me trying no matter what, you know, picking myself up no matter how many times I fall. But also, you know, like the lessons that I want my children to pick up, like particularly for my girls, how I want them to be treated. You know, I don't want them to let themselves be treated just any kind of way. So even in terms of relationships, my son, how he should treat the women around him and things of that nature. So everything I do, from business to the way I run my household to the way I pray, and I, you know, I do pray. I am very big on spiritual balance, really, is what I strive for. And all of that I do for my kids. If it wasn't for them, I don't think you'd be talking to me right now, because I don't know what kind of state I would be in, given some of the things that we've endured. But I do meditate. I find that I started meditating probably about, I'm going to say about 7 years ago. And maybe a little longer than that. And the reason I started meditating was because my life was a mess. It was, you know, I was, you know, locked in legal battles with my ex-husband, and my second marriage had failed, and I was not working, and I was having trouble getting things together financially. And it was just, it was terrible and stressful, and I was a train wreck. And I had to calm my mind down, because all I did was think all the time. And there are people who say, oh, well, you know, meditation tells you to clear your mind. Well, that's not exactly what it does. That's something that they say, but you can't really clear the mind completely, because the mind is its own little wild thing, and it's going to latch on to anything and think about it. So what you try to do, though, is be mindful of what you're thinking, so that you can push those thoughts aside to get to some clarity. And that's really what I found that meditation did for me, was help me to center myself emotionally and spiritually again, so that then when I was not meditating, I could focus my energy in a more positive direction than just sitting here, you know, constantly obsessing about everything going wrong. And once I was able to do that and retrain my brain, and that's really what I think meditation does, is it retrains your brain. Once I was able to start doing that, then I could make more progress in business, in, you know, career, in relationships, even in the, I saw the transformation in the way that I interacted with my kids. So it's been a lifesaver in so many ways. The other thing I started doing some years ago, and I was not terribly consistent in Atlanta, but you know I just moved out to the Los Angeles area from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in Atlanta 11 years. And Atlanta
mm-hmm.
is one of those cities where if you're not in the cities, things are pretty inconvenient. So, and even if you are
wow.
in the city, the traffic is crazy. So for me,
wow.
I kind of dipped my toe into yoga, and I found that I loved hot yoga. I like yoga. Yoga's cool. But hot yoga is the stuff. It is hot yoga. It's crazy how you can do something so challenging and feel like the whole time you're doing it, like, I can't keep doing this. I can't. And then you get to the end and you're like, I've got to do that again immediately. That's literally how I felt. It's psychotic the way that happened. But it really does. It changed things for me physically because I've been in an auto accident, back in like 2009, I was in an auto accident. My back was pretty messed up, and I had lost a lot of mobility, and I was so young, right? And I was like, something's got to change. And I started doing the yoga, and it made all the difference in the world physically, but it also, again, reinforced the mental and emotional and spiritual changes that I needed to
mm-hmm.
make progress in life. And make progress mm-hmm. in my career, make progress in my business. And I saw I made more strides in the last 7 years probably than I had made in the whole 10 or 15 years before that, truthfully.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Those are two main things, I think. And then the other thing is I honor our ancestors. I believe that the people that came before us, the only reason we're here is because we stand on their shoulders. It's, kind of a bastardization of an African proverb, but that's why we're here, is because they came before us, and I think they have a lot of wisdom and energy they can share with us, and I think that by acknowledging that and looking to them, I don't think our dead are gone. I think they are still around, like I am
Girl,
pretty confident my mom,
take a breath,
my mom
yes,
is,
take a breath,
is around.
Take a deep breath. Take
I
a deep breath.
Know.
Cause you preaching.
Well, it's
Go
true
ahead.
Though. I mean, listen, when I was pregnant with my first baby and I was so full of anxiety because, oh my gosh, I'm about to have a baby. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Who came in my dreams to comfort me? My mom. My mom came to comfort me. When I had that baby, my beautiful baby, and I said, oh, my God, I wish my mom was here to see her. Who came in my dreams and held that baby? My mom.
Come on now.
So you can't tell me.
Come on.
You can't tell me that she's not watching over us. I know she is. And so I acknowledge that, and I honor that, and I look all the way back through our lineage, even to people we don't know. I may not know their names, but I know their spirits walk with us. They want the continuation of this family line. They want it to be successful.
Come on now.
And mm-hmm. So that's it. I would say that's the three main pillars right there. Yeah.
I really love the fact that we have so much synergy. I'm born June 16th, and if I'm not mistaken, you're June 18th?
June 13th. Yeah.
June 13th. That was going to be my second guess, because I was thinking earlier. I said, is it June 18th? And then I thought, did I need to back up to June? Well, there is so much synergy and so much likeness between us. One, I feel the same way. I don't feel like had it not been for the fact that I had children to live for, mm-hmm. when I was out there 8 years on crack, every day I was praying, Lord, please don't let me die out here in this disease before I can get my children back and raise them into adults with morals of value in my parents' lifetime. That was my prayer every day, every day, every day, every day. Lord, please don't let me die out here in this disease. Okay? So when you talk about your children being that driving force, it's everything that you said. It's the legacy that you carry. So, yes, it's your children, but it's the depth of the legacy inside of you that you're leaving. It's the torch that you're carrying, and you better believe your mother has been walking the journey with you. When you gave her permission to join you, when we give our ancestors permission to join us, you know, I think that that's when we become mature enough in our own spiritual walk to be able to handle the fact that they are still spiritually alive. And I'm a firm believer of that, too. I'm such a firm believer of that. And so your message is very strong in that sense. Ooh, yes. All right. Well, let me ask you this. Well, let me ask you if you'd like to expound further on that, and then we'll move on.
Well, I mean, really just the main thing with the ancestors is just really recognizing that it doesn't matter whether or not you know all your blood relatives. You have ancestors by blood and you have them by adoption. People, we adopt family all the time. And so you may have, you know, friends that you call aunts and cousins and sisters, you know, right? All of those people become your family. And truthfully, we're all part of the same human family. And when it comes right down to it, we can call on people that we don't know and just ask them to give us the strength. So even if you don't know your birth family, you know, I think that's really important. That has been truthfully one of the most important things that I have done in the last 20 years, 17 years, what have you, just to really start what I would say dealing with my ancestors, because it's funny the wisdom that you pick up and you don't even know how you got it sometimes.
Come
like
on,
you will just suddenly know something. I've had where I see somebody and I will just, you know, and sometimes you just start talking and it's something that that person needed to hear and
Come
you
on.
Don't know where it came from. And that comes from spirit. So, you know, that's my perception of the thing. And I've had it happen to me where people have walked up to me and said just the right thing at just the right moment. And I've had where I've done it, and I think it's because spirit connects all of us, and that's why it's important to deal with. It doesn't matter what your religion is. It doesn't matter. Organized religion is one thing, but how we connect with others energetically, spiritually, is what really moves things. That is life.
You better preach. You know, energy is everything, and we are definitely operators of the spirit. And so when we're doing God's work, he will use you. When you open your spirit and you have that loving kindness, God knows who he can use and whose spirit is ready to be used. He atones us for such a time. He atoned me for this show. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But when you talk about family, you might want to shout out to everybody you know, because the phone lines are lit up. And I want to acknowledge that, you know, area code 408, area code 678, area code 919, area code 323, area code 404 a couple of times over. We see you. We know that you're listening. Michelle, your family and friends are definitely tuned in. And the reason why the phone lines will not be opened is because this is a discussion between two people. It is biblical, such as it was in the Bible days. If you believe, the woman at the well was at the well, and there were only
two people in that discussion. So I try to stay true to that, but you can definitely catch Michelle on Somewhere in the Middle. She'll let you know all about what's coming down the pipeline with her in this business segment. But I echo what you're saying. You know, just having our ancestors there is our strength and our guide, and God definitely can use us in other people's lives when it comes to having a good word and, you know, lifting up someone that day or calling someone or reaching out. I remember the first time I heard about the $50 holy handshake. I don't know what the heck is a $50 holy handshake. I'm standing in the post office, and a friend's uncle, you know, I thought he was trying to be sweet on me. You know, I don't want an old uncle, whatever. You know, I mean, he's just, okay, hi, uncle such and such, so and so. Say nice things to you as my mechanic's uncle. But we're standing in the post office, and he, you know, oh, hey, uncle, you know, so and so and such. And he went and shook my hand, and I felt something in. I went to look at it. Oh, no, you can't look in your hand when somebody put something in it? And you don't know what it is? Girl, I got outside. It was a $50 bill. I said, what? He said, oh, yeah. Shake. You can't look at it. I said, oh, okay. So when I gave out my first holy handshake, I said, don't look at it.
Wow.
It's a holy handshake. But I really do appreciate, you know, you're being spirit-led and having a good word for someone and, you know, having that sense of family, that sense of lovingness, that sense of, you know, the world is surrounded around, you know, your love for your kids, your love for your family, you know, and your love for your ancestors. And being that you are an entrepreneur, what is coming down the pipeline, or what do you have going on right now? Before we move on to our health and wellness segment, what do you have going on right now business-wise that you want our listeners to know about?
Wow. Well, there's so much that's going on, but primarily, of course, Urban Book Editor is my primary vehicle right now, writing, editing, program development, technical writing, a lot of technical writing, and some publishing. And along with that, you know, writing and whatnot, I have published a book last year called Love and Other Monsters. It's actually under my pen name, Michelle Bishop, and that is with my two co-poets, Nina Brav and KB. And so that is on Amazon. That's available on Amazon. And, of course, you can go to my website and shoot me an email, and we can get a copy of that for you. But the other thing that's going on is it's actually a little bit outside of the Urban Book Editor scope. Some time ago, Spirit led me to write a program. Because people ask me all the time, how do you get so much done? How do you do all the stuff that you do? You've got three kids. At one point, I had three kids in three different schools. I was like George Jetson, doing a little drop-off every morning and coming back in the afternoon, 2 hours each way almost. And people are like, how do you do all of this? And, you know, you're working full-time and you're doing this business and all that. And Spirit led me to write up a program for that. So I'm going to be developing that program and offering that to help guide people who want to get more progress in those areas of their lives where they've been maybe stumped, because a lot of times it's a combination of our emotional or mental or spiritual state, but also practical things like how we're managing our time, which that, believe it or not, is related to your mental and your emotional state. So I've got a new program that's going to be coming out very shortly, and so I want people to look out for that as well.
All right, all right. Well, I want to let our listeners know that it is Tribe Family Channel's wish list that Michelle Berard will be joining us in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 10th,
where my co-host, Marshall Thompson, the last man standing of the Shy Lights, will be performing. GQ will be in the building. There are many different groups that are on there, but I am hoping that Michelle will give us her journalism background for Tribe Family Channel's Soul School Music with Marshall Thompson, the last man standing of the Shy Lights. And girl, we're going to go to Vegas. Oh!
I know, right? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What?
Wow, yes. So I was honored to be able to just share that with Marshall Thompson. I called him this morning to let him know to, you know, put us definitely on that list, book us, and we're in the building. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And speaking of Marshall Thompson, his show airs tomorrow, and we're going to have Keith Jackson on there. He is the cousin of Janet and Michael Jackson, the Jackson family, and he is the newest member of the Shy Lights band. He is on the Congos. So for our listeners, if you want to tune in tomorrow, the same Tribe Family time and station, you can listen to Marshall Thompson of the Shy Lights. Now, Michelle, I have had such a wonderful conversation and time with you. We're going to move into our health and wellness segment as we wind down to the last few minutes of the show. This show is dedicated to colon cancer awareness and those we lost along the way. So we're going to pause for a moment of silence and reflection for those that we have lost to colon cancer. And thank you very much for taking the time out to recognize those that are dealing with colon cancer or that have gone on home and are no longer suffering in that battle and walking amongst our ancestors. Michelle, what do you do to stay on course health-wise?
You know what the main thing is that I do? The meditation helps a lot, I'm not going to lie, because you have to have your mind right if you're going to try and be healthy. I'm not huge into, you know, like cardio and all that, running or any of that stuff. I don't do that kind of stuff. But I'm a big proponent of cooking. And that's because I grew up on real food for the most part. So, you know, I'm not used to, you know, fast food and all that. Yes, we'll have it while we're out if we're stuck across town or something like that, but I prefer to get home and eat real food. So I cook for my kids. I cook, you know, unfortunately, it's hard for me to cook in small quantities. It's now down to just my son and me in the house most of the time. But it's hard for me to cook in small quantities because I'm used to cooking for a family. But I think that's really important, making sure you're cooking, eating vegetables and salad and all the good green stuff, fruit, and just trying to, you know, watch what you put in your body. I'm not going to lie, I'm from down south, so I have never met a piece of bacon I didn't like. You know, I ain't never met a ham I didn't like. I'm not going to say I won't eat a ham. You know, but, you know, all things in moderation, all things in moderation, and drink tons and tons of water. Yep. I drink,
amen.
And the other thing is I drink tons of water, and those, I don't really do soft drinks and stuff like that. I just don't believe in that.
Right. Well, it has been not only an honor and a privilege, it has been fun and it has been a pleasure having you to close out The Woman at the Well Season 3. This is our last episode. We will be coming back December 12th for Season 9, and we are dealing with Me Too moments. Season 9 of The Woman at the Well, dealing with Me Too moments. So be sure to join us, refer a friend, email tribefamilychannel@gmail.com, and we will be happy to consider you for a guest on our show. Other than that, we definitely want you to look out for Michelle Barrard somewhere in the middle this Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Her guest will be former New York State Trooper Gary Richardson. That is on November 3rd, this Friday, with Michelle Barrard, my guest, tonight on our sister station, Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Barrard. Her guest is New York State Trooper Gary, former New York State Trooper, but he is still actively with the DOD, Gary Richardson. And Michelle, thank you so, so very much. Shout out your website again so anyone that wants to connect with you can do so.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for having me. You can reach out to me on Facebook, Urban Book Editor, or on Instagram, also Urban Book Editor, and the website is urbanbookeditor.com, or you can reach me directly on my personal website, Michelle Barrard, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Barrard, B-A-R-A-R-D, .com, and then you can get me there. You can email me from there as well.
That sounds good. That sounds good. Well, we had a wonderful time, and I want to thank you once again, Michelle. You can follow our studio at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. You can visit us online. Our website is under construction, gumbofortheSoulInternational.com. Meanwhile, follow us on Twitter at Tribe Family Channel US or at Gumbo for the Soul, and I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/Tribe Family Channel. Connect via email at tribefamilychannel@gmail.com, and definitely have a blessed rest of your evening. God bless, and we would be remiss not to send out our love and thoughts and prayers for the victims of the recent New York terrorist tragedy. You be blessed, Michelle, and I want to thank you once again for closing out season 3 of The Woman at the Well, live on Tribe Family Channel.
Thanks so much. You have a great, great evening.
You as well. God bless you. Talk soon. Bye-bye.